Hello, and thank you for, again, hosting me this week. So I thought we'd start off, with an ongoing prayer this evening. The prayer that Thy will be done. Thy will be done. And I encourage all of us just to settle into this prayer. To deeply open into this prayer. What does it truly mean for Thy will to be done? What does that mean? How can and how shall Thy will be done in the most efficient manner? How can we make ourselves fit conduits for God's grace, for God's intelligence? What can we offer? What can we offer God? I think many of us are excited about tomorrow's eclipse. But this evening, I encourage you to contemplate how your egoic nature and different aspects of your human nature are eclipsing God's light. God's grace in your life and through you into the world. You know, it's funny, when I began to study with Adya, one of the great questions that I would really sit with was, what does it mean, this teaching on no self that Adya kept talking about? What does it mean? You know, how does this experience of no self manifest in our lives? You know, kind of growing up in a Christian tradition and growing up in with my teacher David, who I spent 20 years with, who was more from a yogic and a Christian tradition, and who studied deeply the teachings of Sri Aurobindo. But one of Aurobindo's greatest teachings was, Thy will be done. Thy will be done. How can we surrender and become a fit conduit for grace? You know, in the way that St. Francis spoke about. How could we surrender? What could we give? And when I was young on the path, I used to think about, you know, being this really holy person, you know, like walking around in white robes and, you know, always talking softly and sweetly and gently. And that was my idea of me surrendering into God. You know, and as I studied with Adya, you know, he had so much focus on this, these things of no self. And of course, many Buddhist teachers, that's what they talk about. There's no self. And at first, when they were speaking about it, it didn't make any sense to me. So I was always thinking, of course there's a self here. And what would be the point of no self? And it seemed like the teachings on no self were about getting to a place where you no longer suffered. And to be honest, I think that teaching is just radically upside down. And I think Adya would agree with me here. The teachings on no self and the teachings of Thy will be done are completely in alignment. For God's will to be done in you and as you. It's helpful if there isn't a big fat ego in the way. It's helpful if you don't have incredible wants, needs, and desires, and a big agenda. It's easy for thy will to be done if we don't need to be seen or heard or acknowledged in some certain special type of way. You know, in a sense, the less ego we have, the easier it is for God to move through us, to live through us, to manifest through us. So it took me many years to figure this out. Many, many years. In fact, I can remember my teacher telling me this, and I think I spoke about this last week. That spiritual awakening is really about us waking up so that we can become a slave to God, to God's will. That we can become a slave to her movement in this world. For many years, begin to realize that this life doesn't belong to us. It doesn't belong to us. That this life belongs to God, and God wants nothing more than to manifest her highest in the form of you and I. This is what God wants. God is a movement of supreme intelligence, of supreme love and compassion. And God is always working to help us grow, to help the world grow. And if we look at our lives, we always have this choice right before us. We have a choice to do that which is higher, which is God's movement and God's truth. Or we can do that which is lower, which is self-centered, individualistic, selfish. And we have this continual choice along the way. What kind of life do we want to live? And it's a funny thing because our egoic nature has most of us sense that if we follow it, if we chase after our own happiness, we will find it. But the trick is it's always right around the corner. You know, our ego lets us be happy just for a little bit when we get what we want. But then it presents something new just right around the corner. I could even watch this within myself when I look at my Amazon account, and make they give us an option to have, you know, the shopping cart. And I've noticed just through the years what I've put in that shopping cart, the different things that I've bought. And the other day I was actually looking through my order history because I had to return something. And I saw all these different things that I thought I needed so dearly at the time. I thought that they were going to bring me, you know, some level of satisfaction. And I can laugh now because Many of the things are just gathering dust in the garage. Many of the things are no longer important to me. And that's kind of what our ego does. It's heads of just continually moving off. And so it's an interesting dance, our ego and the sense of self. But one of the things that happens, you know, as we were kind of talking the last couple weeks, you know, in the first week we talked about the transcendent self, which is stepping up and out of ourself, stepping into this greater space of awareness, feeling this absolute freedom in every direction. Freedom that feels so incredibly empty, so incredibly spacious. It's hard to identify with the body anymore. To believe that we are a body. And so many of you who are listening right now probably have had this experience of stepping into this vast perspective, this vast view, experiencing this extraordinary freedom in every direction. And we can even notice it right now. If you just notice the space in which my voice arises, the space in which your thoughts arise. If you notice that space and realize that space is you, it's incredibly freeing. It feels liberating. I'm going to use the key word here, feels liberating. Because we get a taste when we step into the transcendent of non-dual awareness. Awareness that has no beginning, no end, no birth, no death. It feels vast, it feels free, it feels empty. And again, we could step into this right now together. Notice. Now, can you notice that there's this quiet presence right here? Here's every word I say. You don't have to do anything to create it. It's just right here, right now. It's this wonderful spaciousness and this quiet witnessing. Always already present. If you haven't noticed, it's all. And this is what I call the transcendent self. The self is non-dual awareness. Not something we create, it's something which is always eternally here. You let go of thought, we step right into it. It doesn't mean you can't have thought. The thoughts continually arise, but they are arising in the space. But the space, is it not awake? Is it not silently witnessing and registering the thoughts and the feelings and sensations? But instead of focusing on the thoughts, feelings, and sensations, can we notice? The space itself. And not just the spaciousness, but that the spaciousness is alive. It is awake. It is aware. And this realization in and of itself is quite incredible. radically incredible. For most of the planet, they could step into this. Our world would quickly change. And yet last week, we talked about an awakening that was even deeper than that. The awakening of the heart, which happens within you, within your human nature, within your soul, where you wake up, you know, into what Dogen, the great Zen master, spoke about, the intimacy with the 10,000 things, intimacy with all of life, where you feel this absolute unity, absolute divinity, absolute connection with all of life. And of course, to fully step into this, you have to be willing to feel. You have to be willing to experience without walls. Without any walls. And so, and again, with the first realization, you have to be willing to let go of thoughts and your story as who and what you think you are. So to step into the transcendent, you have to unhook from your story, unhook from your thoughts. And notice that there's a presence here, a wonderful, innocent presence, which has been witnessing the story, which has been hearing the story, which has been watching the story replay itself again and again and again. And so it takes a great courage to the story and to step into that which is beyond the story, to step into this childlike innocence. And notice that this innocence is awake and is free and is spacious in every direction. So there's that awakening. And there's this deeper awakening, an awakening in the heart, which again requires that we surrender. That we surrender a belief in feeling that I must feel a certain way. I have to feel a certain way to be okay, to be good, to be loved, to be this, to be that. It takes a courage to surrender how we feel as our identity. Almost all of us are so utterly identified with how we feel. If I feel good, okay, things are good. If I feel bad, things are bad. But what we miss, is the fact that who and what we are is not dependent upon how we feel. Who and what we are is not dependent upon how we feel. Who and what we are is love itself. And as we truly awaken and open in our heart, we discover this incredible love. And so again, the first experience of awakening is spacious innocence. And as this awakening deepens into the space of the heart, we begin to realize unimaginable love in every direction. If we are willing to feel, if we are willing to let go of all of our walls between us and life. And there's so many walls we create. Walls to protect us from our parents, from our partners, from our children, from our in-laws, from our bosses, from the mean kid in the sixth grade who used to bully us on the playground. But because of fear, And the fear of being hurt, the fear of rejection, the fear of this thing and that thing. Our ego has put up so many walls. But if we truly want to live as love in the world, we have to be willing to let go. Let go of our walls. Now, I can remember one day when I was just beginning my work as a therapist. And I think I was just beginning my work as a spiritual teacher, you know, maybe 10 years ago or so. And I had a student who was in my office. And he admitted to me that he had some very intense anger issues. And something happened. I said something to him. And this was bound to happen with, you know, when you work with people, especially if they say they have an anger issue. At some point, I said something. He became incredibly angry at me. And I can't remember if it was a misunderstanding or his anger was just manifesting itself in all its glory. It was quite intense, and he became just ragingly angry at me. And I just sat there with this radically open heart. I felt the extent of his anger. And tears started to pour down my cheeks. So much anger. You know, it was just being, you know, it was filling my body, filling my form. But there was just this sense of, it's okay to be open. It's okay to experience this. It's okay to acknowledge this. We don't have to shut down. We don't have to blame. I don't have to attack or ask him to lower his voice or ask him to leave the room. I can simply sit here and witness and experience the hugeness and the totality of his anger. For this is how love wanted to show up in this moment. And when he saw this, when he saw that I didn't blame him, that I didn't judge him, that I didn't attack him back, I didn't correct him, I didn't, you know, ask him to leave, something began to break within him. And he began to calm down. He began to come to a place of peace. Because there was something within me, something greater than an ego. My heart showed up in the form of love. And met him fully. And so he was able to let go. He was able to heal. He was able to forgive. He was able to grieve. And so I say this again and again. The intimacy with the 10,000 things is intimacy with everything. To be open is to be open. It's to be open. And of course, in that moment, I was open to the love of my heart, the spaciousness of the room. I was open to my innocence and his innocence. I could see him clearly. I saw him as another brother in pain. He was in pain. and my heart was open to him. I was a little shocked afterwards at the power of the heart, the power of love. And of course, this wasn't Craig, the human ego, loving him. I just was simply courageous enough to listen to that quiet voice within me that said, it's okay. It's okay to be fully open. You don't have to shut down. Our lives, our world would radically change if we met each other in this space of absolute love, absolute openness. Thy will. Thy will can be done if open and willing to live in this way. And so first we must surrender our story, we must surrender our thoughts, we must surrender our agendas, and then next we must surrender our feelings, how we feel things should be, how we need to feel. We need to surrender that egoic operating system which says, I need to feel a certain way to be okay. If we just come into our hearts and notice that our heart is already okay, our heart is already perfect. Our heart is already perfect. Our heart is the fullness of love, living in direct communication with God's grace. And so if we unite with that, we don't need to shut down. We don't need to leave the room. We don't have to say, I don't feel good. I need to excuse myself. Which is, again, you know, I hate to say it, but I will. A lot of people are wet noodles. They're wimps. They just want to feel better all the time. And, of course, we all have that program within us that just wants to feel better all the time. But if we are going to be enlightened evolutionaries, if we are calling for God's will to be done, we can't be a wet noodle. We can't be a wimp. We can't be concerned about how we feel. Imagine what would have happened if Jesus cared how he felt. There wouldn't be a Jesus. If Buddha cared how he felt. If you look at the life of any great master, they don't care how they feel. They care about what is true. What is a movement of truth? What is a movement of love? What is a movement of grace? And they align with that, despite whether it feels good or not. But the truth is, if you walk in that direction, it will feel a hell of a lot better than if you just align with, you know, a selfish ego. And don't take that personally. We all have a selfish ego. That's inherently what an ego is, the selfish operating system. One of the things my teacher David continually reminded me was it doesn't matter how we feel. What matters is that we are open to God's grace. And so as we are open to God's grace and God's intelligence, giving birth to itself in us and as us, this is how we walk into the direction of what the Buddha described as having no self. No self, no identity. No sense of individuality. No sense of separation between you and life, between you and God. And I know Buddha didn't use the word God. He used the words spaciousness, emptiness, peace, compassion, love, unity. which, I mean, come on, those are all the expressions of God. Those are all the expressions of God. And so many individuals I meet, you know, who are on this path of non-duality, are so interested in this experience of no self. So many students I've talked to who think they're going to get to this place like it's an achievement. I guess it could be an achievement. But the achievement is not for you or for your ego. Achievement for God. It's basically your ego being erased, being emptied out, being dissolved, your will being dissolved. And again, most individuals think, oh, I get to sit there and I will just be this liberated emptiness where not bother me. No, that's not the case. What happens is you are erased, you are emptied out. And yes, it is disorienting for a period of time. And it is tremendously liberating. But the purpose of it is not for you to sit on your own private, you know, bliss and, you know, spacious cloud. God empties you out so you can be a fit instrument for her intelligence, for her movement, for her love. It has nothing to do with us having our own private heaven world. It has everything to do with our ego getting out of the way and being emptied out of us, being dissolved, having our individuality dissolved, so that we can become a movement of love and grace in this world. So we can become truly united with God, with God's will. Yes. Yes. God empties you out so you can become a fit instrument for her love. Yes. And I can remember when I was speaking to Adi about this, because the teachings never made any sense, to go to the land of Nirvana, so you can get off the cycle of birth and death in samsara within yourself and never come back to this earth again. That teaching made no sense to me. But when he told me, Craig, your will is being dissolved so that this greater will can move through you, now that made perfect sense. That made perfect sense. I was speaking with a student the other day, and he was kind of harassing me about this experience of no self. And he kept, you know, asking me to transmit it to him and this and that. And I kind of told him it doesn't necessarily work that way. And if any of you have fallen into this space, you know, when it first comes, it could be radically disorienting. Radically disorienting. The first time I experienced this in a deep and profound way, I was simply getting up off the couch and I was door. Of my little house here in Colorado. And as I was walking across the family room there, I felt this arm come up from the earth. Very bizarre experience, and it pulled me down to the ground. There was just a sense of that I was dying, that I was witnessing my own death. And so I came to my knees, and I pretty much laid on the ground. And there was just this sense that my personality, that my humanity, that my egoic nature, that this sense of individuality was being erased. It was such a bizarre experience, such a bizarre feeling. On and on for hours and hours. I can't even remember what I was trying to do. I had to be somewhere. So it's quite silly, you know, looking back on it. But God brought me to the earth. And there was just this sense of a quiet death. And it's interesting how we relate to death. So many people are terrified of it. But wonderful might be the wrong word for it. But perhaps beautiful may describe it better. It was just this absolute beauty and a total silence that overtook me. It was hard for me to even think a thought, to imagine a thought. That sense of the witness in me, the sense of the self-consciousness, was just simply being dissolved. Now I have to be careful. I'm going to stop myself, because when I step into that world too much, it leaves me in a state of samadhi, and I can't talk. I can't really function. And so that experience, it went on for hours and hours as I laid there on the floor. And in those hours, it turned into more and more hours. So the rest of that week and the rest of that month was incredibly inconvenient for me. There was times when God would just take a hold of me and leave me motionless, kind of drooling on myself in a state of samadhi and absolute emptiness. The state of utter non-division with all of life. It's funny because I've had such a deep towards God. And I've always felt the sense of me, and then there's God. And a sense of me opening to God's grace. But as we truly walk into the space of no self, it feels as if God wakes up in you as you. And it's one without a second. There's not a you and a God, but just this movement. Just this hugeness of silence. Just this hugeness of love. It can come across as sounding very arrogant and egotistical. And I rarely talk about it, but you know, I said I would talk about it in this series, and more people are asking me to speak about it because I think it's waking up in more and more individuals. And so over the years, I've continued to have this experience. This experience of being erased, of being emptied out. And for a while it's happening 4 or 5 or 6 times a week, where God would just take my breath away. And leave me there, you know, for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, just in the state of what I call uselessness. Like, I became incredibly useless. You know, my wife and my kids would be like, geez, you know, honey, or geez, dad, like, what the hell? You can't even eat, you can't walk, you can't talk, you just lay there. I couldn't even respond to anything. Even this week, God came and took me. It's a very inconvenient experience to be taken in this way. But when we surrender our life, again, it doesn't necessarily mean we're going to put on white robes and have a big beard and have flowing hair and dress up like a swami or this or that and have all these, you know, students bowing before us as we offer our supreme satsang or whatever it is that we think. You know, I'm always humored by what people think is going to happen. You know, one of the greatest things that happened, you know, through this experience of no self, is you lose a lot of your memory, a lot of the past. And it is as if there is no future, there is no past. You're eternally in the now. You couldn't even imagine how there could be something that's not the now. It's funny, sometimes people ask me what I did yesterday, and I, excuse me, I really struggle. What was yesterday? Point not for us to have some experience of samadhi for ourselves. The point of this, and I'll say this in a really silly way, is so that we can be emptied out, so that we can become a good worker bee for God. So that we can become a fit instrument. No self means no self. It means it has nothing to do with us. My teacher Ajahn has often said, no one could ever want this. But there's something intuitively within us that kind of drives us in this direction. That's like, oh, no self, what is that? I want that. I want that. You know, that's kind of the carrot on the stick, you know. But yes, of course, it is tremendously liberating. It does feel wonderful not to have a past. And sometimes my wife, she'll just get so frustrated with me. She'll say, you can't remember anything, Craig. I just laugh, you know, because I'm like, why would I want to remember anything? And especially in my line of work, you know, with, I sit with people in suffering all day, every day. So why would I want to remember, you know? But God does this funny thing with us. If there's something we need to remember, then God will download that information into us so that we do remember. But yes, it is radically disorienting to have yourself erased. And for many people, it's quite frightening. But again, I'm going to go back to, you know, one of the gifts that I've been given is to trust in God's movement. If you can trust, the process goes simpler, it goes easier. Your humanity is being erased, your egoic nature is being erased. and you're being filled with God's grace, with God's love, with God's truth, with God's intelligence. You are being erased and yet simultaneously refilled, expanded with God's grace, with God's love, with God's joy, happiness, and wonder. And yes, of course it's wonderful, but it takes some getting used to. When this first time, when I was beginning to have these, it felt as if I was losing my mind. And for many students that I've worked with, they come to be terrified. I'm losing my mind. I say, yes, I smile. That's the point. The point is to lose your mind. How many of you are actually happy with the experience of your own mind, your own human mind? How many of you are happy with the internal critic and the lawyer and the voice of your mother and the voice of your father and the voice of the superego, all fighting with each other? How many of you are happy with that experience? And so as we begin to step more and more fully and deeply into this realm of no self, all those voices begin to be erased away. The inner commentary begins to end. And my, is that a gift? What a wonder it is to let go of the inner commenter, the inner arguer, the inner critic. And this is not something we consciously surrender. It's something that's taken from us. You know, if we're thinking about surrendering the critic, I mean, that's a good start. We can try to do that. But in a sense, for it to really happen, we are opening to God and having complete and utter faith and trust in God's movement, God's intelligence, God's will. And as we surrender into that, she takes that which is lesser from us. And leaves in its place a greater love, a greater spaciousness, a greater emptiness, a greater non-division. So the more and more we step into the place, the more and more impossible it becomes to have division within us, to have multiple voices within us. If I try to imagine what it would be like to have multiple voices arguing within me, automatically I begin to feel stressed out. If I try to recreate that experience. And that tends to be the experience of most individuals on the planet. If six voices in their head, and they fight or flight, survival voice, and all these voices argue with each other. But as we awaken, you know, again, going back to that first level of awakening, the transcendent, you let go of the story, and you experience yourself as spaciousness in every direction. And oftentimes the way we experience that is the experience awareness as a witnessing awareness. We can witness all of our thoughts, all of our feelings. We can witness our story. That's the first level of spiritual awakening. As we awaken in our heart, there's this great experience of absolute unity. And instead of like coldly witnessing our thoughts and our feelings, we see that everything is made of love. Everything is made of radiance. We see love and we experience love everywhere. The awareness of our heart is radically different. Radically different than the awareness of the mind or the third eye or whatever we want to call that, that mental center, transcendent center. The awareness in our heart is, it's love. We see love. We experience love in all that we see. There's no coldness about it. It feels as an absolute intimacy with all of life. And yet as we come down deeper and awaken deep in the gut, deep in the hara, the experience is one of total non-division with all of life. There doesn't feel as if there is an I and a you. You experience yourself everywhere. It's funny when people, they talk to me, they say, what's it like to talk to so many people? And I feel like, I don't feel like I'm talking to a bunch of individuals. I feel like I'm talking to myself. That everyone is me and I am everyone. That I am life. Everyone is life. Life is life. We are all this movement. This one singular movement of life. This total non-division, total non-separateness with life. It's the most paradoxical experience. And simultaneously, despite all this experience, all this talk of absolute non-division, absolute no self, this and that, despite that, one of the great hallmarks of truly opening into the experience of no self is paradoxically and ironically you giving yourself the freedom to be you completely and totally. And I say this with the biggest smile, that for once in your life you give yourself complete and total freedom. You merit to grow, to evolve, to struggle, to laugh, to cry. You finally start to get rid of your humanity. And there's a total acceptance for your humanity. This is the life I was doing nothing but trying to get rid of myself. And the more God erased me, paradoxically, the more I was able to fully be me. And so we don't get to a place where we're simply left drooling on ourselves, sitting on our own private bliss world, living in this absolute samadhi, and that's eternally available to us. But what we're truly given is a total permission to be ourselves, while simultaneously to be a movement of God's grace, of God's evolution, of God's love. I want to emphasize the word evolution here. God is a movement of evolution. We will never get to a place where we are perfected. We will never get to a place where we don't exist at all. There is no end to the path. Oftentimes in Buddhism, no self is equated with nirvana, and nirvana is equated with cessation, and cessation is equated with the end of the path. That's simply not the case. We live in an evolutionary world, and we have an evolutionary form. And that human nervous system, this human body, will always be eternally being upgraded. It will always have an evolving nature, an evolving edge. And so we surrender to that fully, without any anxiety. My teacher Ajahn often describes full enlightenment as no anxiety about being human. It's no argument with God, no with life, no argument with self, no argument with other. Fully letting go. Giving yourself full permission to be you, and simultaneously living in full alignment with God showing up in you as you. So again, I know we're getting near the end here. I always welcome questions, but also one of my students told me the other day, he said, "Craig, you never stop talking. You just talk and talk and talk." So forgive me if I went on and on. If anyone has a question, you're welcome to raise your hand or type it in. But I, so what does this mean to you? And please forget about the story of Craig Holiday here. But what does this mean for you? What is it within you that's begging to be surrendered? What is it within you that's begging to let go? So that something greater can come forward. How can you let go? How can you get out of the way? So that something greater can come forward in you as you. It's not that there's anything wrong with you. It's not that there's anything wrong with your humanity or your ego or your personality or any of that. But from an evolutionary perspective, from the perspective of "Thy will be done," what is it within you this evening that wants to let go? That wants to surrender his self, herself to God? Can you join me in this ongoing prayer, this ongoing conversation with God, with ourselves, with the highest? What is it that wants to surrender? And if we're having trouble letting go, can we call upon God? God, will you come into me? Lord, will you come into me and take this from me? Take this pain, take this sadness, take this agenda, take my politics, take my anger, my whatever it is. Lord, will you take this from me? I offer it up to you so that I may be a fit conduit of your grace, of your love, of your truth in this world. And again, thank you so much for joining me, offering me this opportunity to share and to receive. I feel so much love from all of you, so much sincerity, I feel blessed by your hearts, by your love. Thank you again for joining me this evening. And I look forward to seeing you and sharing with you all this coming week. Of course, you're always welcome to send me a question through email, CraigHoliday@gmail.com, and Holiday is two L's. If any of you want to talk, you know, I have some availability to do sessions. There's information about that on my website. And again, thank you so much. I'll take care. May God bless each and every one of you. May all of us become fit conduits for God's grace, God's love in this world. Amen, and may peace be with you.